Ryan and I started talking about the movies, all the Marvel movies and this stuff coming out. And I'm like, I just don't understand. I was like, there are so many people, but like, you think that they all have different stories? He's like, yeah, but they all live in the same
it's the same thing they do with Game of Thrones.
And I'm like, no, like, this is... And he goes, you didn't grow up reading comic books, and you didn't grow up, like, knowing who these characters are. Then he pulls out his phone to show me, like, old-school X-Men cartoons he, like, grew up watching. I'm like, oh, I only thought X-Men were movies. Like, apparently. I'm like, I don't know, this is not...
But it's the same thing that Game of Thrones does. Like, you've got these people in... the Seven Kingdoms, and you've got these people over in, you know, in the other areas that
they feel.
Oh, forget it. All right. Okay. Do our thing.
Well, welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we take our faith beyond Sundays.
That was pretty good.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I could be Patrick.
You could be, except you're in the wrong chair.
I know, right?
I'm a Patrick. Oh, we're all thrown off. We don't know what's going on here.
I am Katie Phillips, and I am here with Pastor David Bowser.
How you doing, Katie?
And not with Patrick. Aww. Patrick is still out with baby. So congratulations. Right. We're excited.
Yeah.
But we're excited for you to come back, too,
because we missed you. We pre-recorded as many episodes as we could.
We did.
But we couldn't get this one.
Nope.
So, sorry, listeners. You have to bear with us, because Patrick is the glue that quite literally holds this
whole
podcast
thing together.
So there's a decent chance that this thing's going to go off the rails, but Katie and I are going to give it a shot. We're going to see how this goes.
Oh, it might be real scary.
Yeah, but Katie, I think you've got a news story for us.
I do. So I have the news story today. So a passenger was thrown off of Air New Zealand plane.
While in flight?
I don't think so.
Just like tossed out the luggage department? That'd be...
For refusing to read the safety instructions card.
Wow.
Right?
All right, so quick listener poll. If you actually read the safety instruction card when you get on an airplane, we want to hear from you because I think you're a liar, and I think this is the same thing as those iTunes agreements that we talked about a couple weeks ago. None of us read it, and if we did, we'd probably win $10,000 for finding some secret thing that's hidden in the code.
Right. So this woman was on an exit row.
Okay.
And that, of course, I mean, we like to buy the exit row because extra legs, leg room.
You got kids. You can't put like, a kid in the
exit row. No, you can't have kids in the exit row.
So when you travel by yourself.
When we travel by ourselves, we like to be in the exit row.
When you fantasize about the day when you'll be able to travel without children.
Right. Oh, man, I've got stories about that, too, on airplanes, but we won't go there. So she didn't just refuse to read the card.
Oh, okay. There's
she also refused to watch the video.
Oh.
Or read the card. So she didn't, like, this was, like, asked of her, and she said no.
Okay.
I'm like, but when you buy your ticket, don't you have to click, like, a button that's like, yes, I will be prepared to help get passengers off the plane in an emergency
situation. Maybe New Zealand has different rules or laws about that.
I don't know.
I mean, so in the United States, right, you get on a plane, if you're sitting in the exit row, the lady just, or the flight attendant comes by and says, do you agree to comply with these regulations?
Right.
And do you feel like you're able to do this? And you say, you have to verbally say yes. But I think like, in the United States, if I say no, they just like move me to another seat and someone else gets my seat.
Right. So
but this lady got kicked off the plane.
This gets even worse. Hold on.
Oh, it gets
Let
better.
Me tell you the next little sentence.
All right.
So when she was asked to pay attention, she went as far as to put her fingers in her ears.
Okay.
To ignore the flight crew.
Yeah, see, so it's not so much what she was thrown off for saying no. She was thrown off for being a jerk to the flight crew.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So then they had to return the plane to the gate. And she was arrested.
Yeah, this is now, disorderly on a flight.
Right?
That's a federal offense in
That's
the United States.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Ooh, no thank you.
Yeah.
I like to sit there.
Know what you're getting into when you get that exit row, folks. Be careful.
Yeah, exactly.
If nothing
Moral
else,
of the story.
I mean, just do what we all do and pretend to watch. Come on.
Right. Just go, I'm good.
Yeah. Look
I mean, don't get on a plane with me if I'm in your exit row, apparently, because I don't really know what I'm doing.
It's all explained. It's like using a AED for someone. You know, all the instructions are right there. You know, you go through a training, sure, but it's all right there.
I do know that I'm supposed to put my mask on before I help anybody else.
That applies regardless of where you're sitting. That's not just an extra thing. bigger problem with the exit row is how do you get out the door, right?
At that point, the
masks are no longer crucial because we're trying to get out of the plane. We want to take the mask off.
This is true.
And get out.
This is true.
Yeah. Okay, so don't fly with Katie in the event that you're anticipating a plane crash.
Right.
Which hopefully we're not anticipating.
Right, exactly.
Stick with
everything
that.
Should be good.
Oh, goodness. All right.
We're already going off the rails. Patrick.
Patrick, rein us in. Rein us in. So what are we talking about today, Katie?
Today we are talking about the early church.
Ah.
And, should we go back to the early church? Should we be where we are?
Mm.
What should we do?
That's
the pondering question.
Okay. So when I brought this topic to you the other day. And so when I said to you, we should talk about the early church, what came to your mind? What were you thinking about?
What is the early church?
Okay.
That was my first question. Is it like the early church when Paul was out walking around?
Sure.
Is it the early church like when it was a Roman Catholic?
Ah, okay. So like early church, medieval
where
times.
Where are we going, early church?
How far back in our time machine do we need to go?
What are we talking about for early church? There's lots of early churches.
Yeah, Patrick forgot to gas up the time machine before he left, so we can't take the time machine today. Tragically, it's just sitting in the corner collecting dust. It's a really worthwhile investment. So when I'm talking about the early church, I'm talking about the first believers after Jesus' resurrection.
Right.
So we're talking about the stories of Acts, the stories of Paul and Paul's letters, and then kind of the first 100 to 150 years after that. Kind of the period of time when the church was still what we would call underground, before it became part of the empire. Constantine comes around, for all you history nerds out there, Constantine comes around eventually in the early 300s, if my timeline is correct here. He's in this battle to like try to take over the Roman Empire, and in this battle he's going up into a battle that he should lose, but he has this vision, and in the vision Jesus appears to Constantine and says, "Hey, if you put my symbol on your shields, you'll win."
Mm-hmm.
And so he puts a whole bunch of crosses on the shields of his army, and they win this battle. And so this is how the story goes, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he becomes emperor, Christianity becomes the religion of the empire.
Gotcha.
Now, how much of that is historical accuracy or not? What we do know is that when Constantine becomes emperor, Christianity becomes the religion of the empire. That part we know for sure. And so we're kind of talking about that period before the church became part of the empire, when the church was an underground movement, when it was by and large against the law to be Christian. When at various periods Christians were persecuted and intentionally sought out and I don't want to say hunted necessarily, but were intentionally kind of brought out and put on trial. That's kind of first 150 to 200 years of the faith. That's the period of time that I'm talking about when we talk about the early church.
Excellent.
Yeah. So first thoughts, going back to a time of persecution, sound like fun?
Nope. I'm good.
that
part I don't so much feel like we should go back to.
Yeah, why not?
Because I'm not that brave.
Okay.
I look back, and like they put everything on the line, and they were like, "Nope, I believe in him. He's real. We're doing this." And I was like, "Okay." And now you're being murdered.
Yeah.
And you're like, "What?"
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really glad now that I live at a time where I can just say, no, I love Jesus, and I'm not going to die for it.
Yeah.
And
we should say we live in a time and a place where we can say that, right?
Yes, in a place, yes, because there are places around the world.
Right, where that's not the case. And that's an important thing for us to remember because our, I will say privilege of living in the United States is that we have the ability to say, I'm a Christian and I'm not going to face persecution for that.
Right.
I can walk out on the side of the street corner as our local junior high is letting out and I can stand there and shout the words of the Bible at the kids as they walk past. And as long as I'm not injuring anybody, no one has a right to arrest me for
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess as long as I'm not like directly verbally harassing someone, that would probably also warrant an arrest. But if I'm just shouting, if I'm just standing on the corner shouting the Bible, no one can arrest me for that.
That's true.
That's my freedom to do so. So there are some very good things about living in the time and place that we do, right? I'm really great with the fact that we have refrigeration.
Oh, yeah.
I'm great with the fact that we have
electricity.
Yep. Electricity is good. Mattresses. I'm a fan of that. Modern plumbing.
Yes.
All of these.
Absolutely.
These
Love
are really
it.
Great things. But when we're thinking about the church in particular, what are some things, like what are characteristics maybe that we think of when we define the modern church? So if, for example, if I were walking up to you and I were a stranger and I said, hey, do you want to come to church with me?
Mm-hmm.
What would you anticipate that would look like?
A building somewhere.
Okay. So there's some building that you're going to go to.
Some building that I'm going to go to.
Okay.
Probably seats. Pews.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. That's great.
There's a gathering.
Probably an altar.
There's a gathering space. There's probably some sort of altar.
Like some kind of stage altar type.
Okay.
Structure.
There's a place where some sort of presentation is going to
happen. Yes, and some pastor.
Okay.
Woman or man.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Will be standing up front talking to me.
Okay.
There will probably be songs.
Okay, so there's probably music. There's probably some sort of teaching instruction that's going to happen. But by and large, the way that you perceive it, at least as I'm here, is that it's going to be a presentation of information.
Yes.
You're gonna sit in a space.
Yep.
And they're going to give you information to receive.
Yes.
Okay. What are other things that might define going to the church?
People.
Okay,
there'll
so there's
going
to be people
there.
Yep. Anything else?
I mean, when I think of church, like, I think of going to a place, sitting with people, singing, and hearing.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a reasonable interpretation of how most of us think about church today,
mm-hmm.
right? And the fact of the matter is, there are things that defined the early church as well. There are kind of these characteristics that define the early church that don't look like what we have now.
Right.
And where we get ourselves into trouble is where we think what we've been doing now has been happening the same way for the last 2,000 years,
right.
forever and ever, amen. And that's just not the case. I mean, it's been happening in a similar way for the last 500 years or so,
mm-hmm.
but even that has
shifted
and molded as we've moved and as cultures have changed. But there are some really critical points where we can kind of get a picture of what the early church looked like and the
mm-hmm.
things that they were doing. So I'm going to read a couple passages for us. I brought some things
Perfect.
With us so that we can kind of get a sense of this. This is mostly coming from the book of Acts, but I'll give you some other references as we go through here too. So first I'm going to read from Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47.
Okay.
All right. So it says, the believers of Jesus, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. Awe came upon everyone because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. So this is the earliest picture of what it was like to be a follower of Jesus that
mm-hmm.
we have. If you're remembering the book of Acts, in Acts 1, 15, all right, Acts chapter 1, 15,
mm-hmm.
we hear that there's about 120 believers of Jesus who are gathered in a room trying to figure out what they're going to do next.
Right.
And that's when they come together and they figure out how they're going to fill Judas's empty slot, and they land
mm-hmm.
on Matthias, and so he becomes the new 12th apostle. And then they have this Pentecost experience where the Spirit and tongues
right.
of fire, and they're
right.
speaking all sorts of different languages, and Peter starts preaching to the people who are there. And when that ends, I didn't read this verse, but this is Acts 2:41, those who were welcomed the message were baptized, and about that day 3,000 people were added.
Oh, wow.
So in one day, right, on Pentecost, you go
30,
from
31.
Yeah, you got 31:20, right? You now have a new membership role.
Right.
To 31:20.
Yeah.
You like by 300%, I think,
mm-hmm.
roughly, if I
mm-hmm.
did that math right. I don't know if that's right or not. I'm really bad at percentages. Doesn't matter. Grew by
a lot.
Right? And so the disciples now have to figure out, what does it mean for us to go from this tiny little group of like 100
mm-hmm.
people
mm-hmm.
to a group of like 3,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about some of the conversations we've had, even here just at Lord
right.
of Life. Some of you listeners at home may have had this similar conversation in your own congregations, where we're like, hey, we're going from 450 in worship to like 600
right.
over the next year and a half to 2 years.
Right.
Right. Imagine in one day going from 100
right.
to 3,000.
Like, hello.
Yeah. And so it was really important for them to kind of define the
right.
boundaries of,
mm-hmm.
you know, how do we welcome these people in? And how do we say this is what the Jesus culture is about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an example that I like to use where if you show up with enough people to any organization, you can almost immediately change the direction of that
right.
organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, if you want to make gun control happen in the United States, show up with more than the number of people that are already in the NRA to the next NRA meeting as legal voting members, and boom, you know, this thing can change overnight. Now, that's not saying that that's going to immediately work, but that's the easiest strategy. But you've got to imagine that when 3,000 people come in, it would have been easy for them to shift the direction that the early church wanted to go.
Right.
And the apostles had to make sure that didn't happen. And so they lay out this this little teaching. And they do this a couple of times. I'm going to quickly read from Acts chapter 4 as well. This is going to give us a similar model here. So Acts chapter 4, starting at verse 32. The whole group of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possessions, but everything they owned was held in common. With great power, the apostles gave their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord, and great grace was upon all of them. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as owned lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold. They laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need. So when you're hearing both of those, what are a couple of like common themes that you hear that they would have been using to define themselves as the church, right? We're talking about the church's building, worship, things being presented. How would they have been defining the church?
So I think it was very personal. Breaking bread in a home.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in a building together. I mean, you're together, but you're not in, I guess you're in a building if you're in a home. But I mean, it's not like what we think of a church
building. Right, sure. It's not a unique place where that's the reason you gather there, right? This is
it's
the place
in
that you live.
Someone's house. Yeah. Right. The other thing that I love too was that their stuff was no longer their own.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody came together. And maybe when you experience the Pentecost of speaking in tongues and all of this stuff, it's so powerful and so moving that like you can't not believe. You know what I mean? And it's just so much bigger than you are.
Yeah.
So being together, and if you have 3,100 people and you all believe in this common being or Christ or whatever you want to call it.
We want to call it Christ.
Well,
that's what we want to call it. Yeah.
Christ. And you believe in this one thing together
so
strongly, and you're with these group of people, and you see neighbors that don't have anything, and you have all of this stuff. Well, of course you want to share that with people who don't have anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are kind of three ways or three categories that most people kind of break these two passages up into that kind of define the early church. And you hit on most of them, right? You have this idea of worship, that worship was central to being a part of the early church.
Right.
I mean, we hear they were daily in the temple. They were devoting themselves to breaking of bread and prayer. And when we hear breaking bread, we don't just mean eating meals. We mean that act of communion, that they're breaking the bread together and remembering that meal that Jesus had shared with his disciples. So you have worship, you have study, right? We have devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching. They were trying to learn the scriptures. They were trying to understand what this meant for their faith and what this was going to mean for them going forward. And then we have this idea of sharing possessions, that all these things were in common. In fact, Paul, when he is writing later on, he writes a letter to the Corinthians. He writes a second letter to the Corinthians, and he writes to them about the same thing. So remember, Paul's letters were written before the book of Acts was written. Right,
okay.
So the book of Acts is written kind of about the time period before and while Paul is writing his letters.
Gotcha.
So those are happening at the same time. And so Paul writes to the Corinthians, we want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that has been granted to the churches of Macedonia. So he's writing to the Corinthians about what the churches of Macedonia did. During a severe ordeal of affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For as I can testify, they voluntarily gave according to their means and even beyond their means, begging us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in this ministry to the saints. And this is not merely as we expected. They gave themselves first to the Lord and by the will of God to us, so that we might urge Titus. And it kind of goes on from there. And then, now you may excel in everything in faith and speech and knowledge and utmost eagerness. So we want you also to excel in this generous undertaking. So even, you know, one of Paul's central themes as he's writing to this church in Corinth, which had a lot of resources. Corinth was a wealthy city, is saying, like, look, there's this other church in Macedonia. They were really suffering. They had a lot of hardship, but they understood the call of this faith to lift up and to give back to Paul's taking up a collection for a famine that's happening in Jerusalem.
Right.
And so he's like, they want to be a part of this even beyond what we would consider to be reasonable.
Right.
Right. I mean, how often do we see people giving here and we're like, man, how can they afford to do that? You know, is that a reasonable thing for them to do? And Paul's saying, this wasn't reasonable for them to do.
Right.
But that's the grace of God that allows them to do that. And I think we lose that sometimes. But, you know, if you think about those three categories, worship, study, sharing possessions, and whether or not we should, as, you know, the current church, go back to that model of the early church, what do you think? Yes, no, how are we doing that?
I think we're already doing those three things.
Yeah?
Those are the big, I mean, we worship.
Mm-hmm.
We, including the Eucharist and taking communion.
Mm-hmm.
We study.
Mm-hmm.
We have Sunday schools. We have Bible studies. We have places that people can come to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then very generous. I mean, we do a lot of outreach here in our building, in our church.
Yeah.
So I feel like we do give back to the community and we are generous.
But none of us are selling our property
no.
and everything that we have and giving the money to the church.
Correct. Yeah. None of us are doing that.
And I'm not doing that either, right?
Right.
I mean, I want to
be
clear. Like, I'm not saying like, oh, I'm, you know, no,
right.
I'm not doing this. This is a picture that we don't fully grasp right now.
Right. I mean, I still go back to them meeting where the people are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and not that the people aren't here.
I get it, yeah.
They are here, but they're the people that we are. Like,
mm-hmm.
we are in with common believers who
mm-hmm.
believe the same thing we do. And, I mean, most of you know I'm a huge fan of Jen Hatmaker.
Yep.
And Jen and her husband, Brandon is a pastor. He, they have a church together.
Okay.
And I know for certain once a year, maybe more than that. I don't know, but I know, I think it's around Thanksgiving time. Could be wrong.
Sure.
But they take their church out into the community.
Okay.
Like, outside, bring, you know, outdoor audio speakers
mm-hmm.
and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to where the homeless are.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring their congregation down there with them. And they worship with the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that idea. I just love being out in the world
mm-hmm.
together. Where a lot of what we do, our Bible studies, our meetings, like all of that is held here in this one central location.
Right.
And I think the early church did a better job of being out with the people than
yeah.
we do.
Yeah. You know, we don't have a particular evidence of where they met. We assume in people's homes, but
right.
we don't know, were they in the same home every week? Did they move around?
Who knows, yeah.
There's a decent chance that they moved around,
right.
Especially as, you know, people were searching for them. You know, they would need to move from place to place to avoid suspicion and to try to stay safe.
Right.
And so that's certainly a possibility that they were meeting in different places. Yeah, you know, I think you've got a good point. I think we do worship and study pretty well. I think the radical notion of sharing possessions is something
mm-hmm.
that we miss. I think we
mm-hmm.
many Christians in the United States, particularly here in our congregational order life, we're very generous
yes.
and are very willing to
yep.
you know, try to find ways to care for others. But this sort of radical nature
mm-hmm.
Is lost on
mm-hmm.
us in our modern sensibilities, particularly in our modern American sensibilities, right?
And I think, too, it's they were willing to go without
yeah.
so that others can have.
Sure.
And I wonder how many times, I mean, I know I don't go, oh, well, I usually go, let me take care of us first,
mm-hmm.
and then whatever's left over, I can take care of other people.
Right.
And how many times should it be, oh, well, we don't have to have that.
Yeah.
You know, that's more than what we truly need.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at least as we're hearing the story recounted in Acts, you know, the point is not even so much that they're willing to go without, as it is that they're willing to trust that they're going to have what they
right.
need, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm going to be fine. We're going to be taken care of
mm-hmm.
Because we're going to give, you know, we know that we're going to put this into a common pot
mm-hmm.
and we're going to get back exactly what
mm-hmm.
we need, and everyone else is going to get exactly what they need so that all of us are going to have a better life together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this type of passage. I mean, there are multiple places where this exists in the scriptures, but it's this type of passage that has caused some people to claim that Jesus would have been more in line with communism than
right.
with capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really kind of hot-button issue for some
right.
people. And I get it. And I'm not saying that Jesus would have, like, supported our understanding of modern communism
right.
because modern communism usually comes with violent dictatorships.
Right. Right.
Also probably not ideal
right.
in the Jesus model.
Right.
You know, this notion of small communities living together
mm-hmm.
and putting all of their resources into a single pot so that everybody had equally,
mm-hmm.
I think, is a reasonable thing to envision Jesus being
right.
on board with.
Mm-hmm.
And the system that we've set up in which by nature of someone having something, someone else does not have that thing, right? Mm-hmm. There's a limit to there's a finite number of resources, whether we're talking about money or food or oil or water, whatever that might be. And so by the nature of someone having it, someone else does not have it. I'm not sure Jesus would be okay with that.
You know, like on a super smaller scale of that, like I think of schools.
Sure.
Like in school, I know that in our public school, I mean, I donate a lot to the school financially. Mm-hmm. I donate items that they might need, but that's benefiting everybody. That's not just for my children.
Right.
That's for the children who may not have anything. Mm-hmm. That's a very small scale.
But that's the way it works, right?
Thing.
All of it happens on that small scale. Like I don't think that we're. A, I wouldn't trust, nor do I think any of us should, give all of our property and everything to a central government organization, right? I'm not saying I'm going to sell everything and say, here you go, IRS, use my money and distribute it as you need. I'm not even saying I want everybody to sell their money and give it to Lord of Life Lutheran Church for us to distribute to our Congress.
Right.
Like, I don't think that's the best way to do it.
Right.
But I think that having these notions of radical senses of how is God going to care for me when I'm trusting that God is going to do that, right? That I'm not trusting my own resources. I'm trusting God to care for me. And that's the kind of radical nature that I think many of us in our modern context lose.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep going a little bit, because there are some more characteristics that we want to get here. So first, we've got worship study, sharing possessions. We think we do worship and study pretty well, and we miss some of that radical nature of sharing possessions, but we got the idea there.
Right.
So let's fast forward a little bit to Acts chapter 10. So in Acts chapter 10, the church has been going for a while. Things are starting to pick up, and Peter has been traveling around, and this question comes about who should be allowed to be a part of the church. You're already laughing.
Go ahead.
I like this. It's kind of a long story. It's verses 9 through 17. And so I'm going to kind of give you a synopsis of the story really quickly, because it's a fun story to synopsize, right?
Okay.
So Peter is up on top of a roof praying in the middle of the day.
Yep.
As one does. Right,
of course.
And so he's praying in the middle of the day, and it's hot, and he's getting hungry, and he's tired, and he starts to have this vision. And in this vision, a blanket comes down from heaven, like this gorgeous picnic blanket, right? So imagine the best picnic blanket you can ever see. And it lays down in front of him on top of this roof that he's praying in. And on this blanket are all of the most delicious foods in the world that Peter has never been allowed to eat.
Okay.
Because they're all unclean. Okay. So you've got shrimp, and you've got bacon, and you've got sausage, and you've got all these delicious things that you and I love, right?
Yep.
These are fantastic foods, you know, brown butter sauces all over the shrimp, you know, the whole nine yards. It's just delicious. And Peter hears a voice, and it says, get up and eat. And Peter says, no way. I've never let anything unclean touch my lips. I'm a good Jew.
Right.
I only eat foods that are what we now call kosher, right? I only eat the clean stuff. I'm not going to eat any of that.
Right.
And this happens several times. And every time the voice, which we believe is God, but it's never specifically described as God, the voice says back to Peter, never call something unclean that I have made clean. And so this is the point where Peter takes this vision, and then he's visited by a whole bunch of Gentiles who want to become Christians, and he's suddenly like, oh, now I get it.
Right.
And all these people who were not Jewish, who are not practicing Jews, are suddenly allowed to become a part of the church, and they receive the Holy Spirit, and they're baptized, and this opens up all sorts of other cans of worms that the church has to deal with. You know, do they have to be circumcised? Do they have to follow the Jewish laws? And this is an ongoing discussion and battle throughout the next several hundred thousand years, not hundred thousand, several hundred, 2,000 years of the church is an ongoing thing. Even today, we talked about this with our relationship to the Old Testament a couple weeks ago. And so it's an ongoing struggle, but this is where it starts. And so suddenly this early church is about widening the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. It goes from, we're here, this is our group, and we're going to stay right here, to saying, no, this group is way bigger than we ever imagined. So how do you think, early church comparison to now, how are we doing at widening the kingdom of God? What does that look like for us?
Again, I feel like we are in our building. I think we aren't necessarily out in the world just constantly welcome, like, just come on, let me take, I mean, I'm physically like trying to grab someone's hand and pull them in. But I mean, like, I just don't feel like, or maybe it, I don't, I know I don't. I'm not out in the world grabbing someone's hand and going, come with me to church. Come with me to church. I don't know. I like to say that we welcome everyone. It doesn't matter You know, you are welcome here regardless of what, you know, who you love, what you look like, where you're from, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and I truly believe that it doesn't matter and you are welcome here.
Yeah.
And
I think that's where it starts, right? You know, the piece of grabbing someone's hand and pulling them in, that's the next category. We're going to get into that in a moment. But when we start with just what's the vision of who's welcome here, right? And for Peter, that's the challenge here. Is all of a sudden his mind is quite literally blown as he's being told all these people that you've been told are not clean, that are not welcome. No, no. I, God, I, Jesus, I've made these people clean, right? My death is for them too. And so give them space and see what I can do through them. Right. And eventually Paul's going to come in, and Paul and Peter are going to kind of come to this agreement that Peter's going to keep working with the Jews and Paul's going to go work with the Gentiles.
Right.
And so, like, all right, well, we're going to figure this out. We'll split the difference.
Right.
And so, you know, I think, you know, within the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which Lord Our Life is a part, I think we've been on a trajectory in the last 50 years of the Lutheran Church, and particularly the last 30 years of the ELCA, of widening the kingdom. You know, we've seen moves that have crossed boundaries of race. Granted, we are still, you know, the, how did Patrick describe it, the widest congregation, or mainline Protestant congregation in the United States. And, you know, that's something that we are wanting to address, but that's something that we're continuing to think about. But we widened those boundaries as we welcomed in women into roles of professional ministry. And, you know, more recently we've widened those boundaries as we've welcomed in people of the LGBTQ community to be in roles of leadership in the church and to be welcomed and affirmed in our congregation. So there is an aspect of widening the community that I think is really important within the within this DNA of the ELCA. I think that's something that we wrestle with and struggle with very seriously, but that we try to take back to stories like this one from Peter and see how that continues to play out in our lives. But that's not what the church is doing everywhere.
Right.
And there's a lot of, if we think of it even on a more local scale, there's a lot of individual congregations that are closing themselves off more and more.
Right.
You know, we're very fortunate to be serving a congregation that is actively looking out into its community.
Right.
And how can we be inviting and welcoming of those who are in our neighborhood and everything else? There's a lot of communities who are not doing that. You know, I've served communities who we say, hey, our community around us is changing, and that those are not the people that we want in our congregation. And I think we struggle with that. I think that's a hard place for us to be. What do you think?
I agree. I do. I think that that's a hard one. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was that, you know, we were out getting people and it doesn't matter. And there was, when you walked in, there was nobody saying, oh, look what that person's wearing or look what that, I mean, I'm so done with that.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It does not matter.
Yeah.
Like, that's just my own personal, because it doesn't matter. You can't keep Jesus in a box, you know?
Yeah.
So why do we tend to do that and cling to our pearls and, you know?
If you can't keep Jesus in a tomb, you're certainly not going to keep him in a box.
Exactly.
Right? Let's just,
Yeah.
Probably not a casket either.
Right.
Whatever box you
exactly.
Might have. Exactly. Yeah. All right. So we've got this idea of widening the kingdom. We're going to take a look at one more category. And this does not have a particular verse with it, but just something for us to think about. This is like Acts chapter 13 through the end of the book of Acts is all what we call Paul's missionary journeys, right?
Okay.
So there are three missionary journeys that we kind of talk about that he goes on. They're little loops. Sometimes you can look in your Bible, you can see a little map that says, oh, here's Paul's first journey, and it, you know, draws a little circle on the thing.
Little feet prints moving around.
If you're in the kids' Bible, it probably has little footprints. Yeah, you're right. And so from Acts chapter 13 all the way through the end of the book, which is chapter 28, it's all about Paul spreading the good news of Jesus. Everywhere Paul goes, that's what Paul's doing. Paul's not worried about overthrowing a political empire. He's not worried about trying to get a job. He's not even worried about trying to build a physical building for these people to meet in. He says, I want as many people as I can to believe in Jesus and to have a relationship with Jesus. And then once I get that started, I'm going to the next place. So as many people as I can come to have a relationship with Jesus. I'm going to read one thing for you. This is from Philippians chapter 1, 12 through 14. If my pages stop sticking together. Here we go. Philippians chapter 1. So this is one of Paul's letters, remember, contemporary with the book of Acts. This is one of Paul's letters that he wrote. I want you to know, beloved, that what has happened to me, this is because he was put in prison, what has happened to me has actually helped to spread the gospel, so that it has become more known throughout the whole imperial guard and to everyone else that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers and sisters, having been made confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, dare to speak the word with greater boldness and without fear. Paul is even willing to see his own imprisonment as a benefit so that more people can know about Jesus. How are we doing at that? As the modern church, are we doing that? Are we thinking about that at all?
I don't know. We've had episodes in the past where we, you know, talked about when hard things happen, when bad things happen, and it's not necessarily that God made that bad thing happen, but can we use that in such a way that brings God to other people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that we ever want horrible things to happen. We don't want people put in jail, you know.
We want some people put in jail, right?
Some who break the law. But bad things happen.
Bad things happen.
Do we use them to glorify God?
Right. Sure.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, let's back up before we even worry about the prison sentence necessarily. How are we doing it just using every opportunity we have to share the good news of Jesus and to try to help people have that relationship?
We've talked about this a little bit before, too. Like, how do we evangelize out into the world? Yeah. And I am not one that's knocking door to door and and going, Jesus loves you, you know? I mean, I believe that, but I'm not necessarily going to individual people and knocking on their door and telling them that. They will know we are Christians by our love. That's what I just keep coming back to. Like,
I'm pretty sure you said that on last week's episode.
I probably did. Who knows? Anyway, I say it a lot. So, but I think that building relationships with people and allowing your actions to speak is the first step in that.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I tend to be in line with your sensibilities on this particular. You know that. The relationship is the first place. You know, we've had this conversation on the podcast and off the podcast before. So we know this about one another, right? We're going to start by letting people know that we care about them and are invested in them. And then that next thing, I think where the modern church falls short, is that we forget that that next step is still necessary. And maybe I shouldn't even say the modern church. I should say the Lutheran church falls short. We do a great job of going out and working in our communities and being active and connecting with people. We don't always do a great job of taking that next step to say, this person, Jesus, matters to me, and I want you to know why. And, you know, what happens when we do that is that the only people who are out there talking about Jesus are people that, by and large, within the Lutheran church, we might not agree with their interpretation of who Jesus is or how Jesus is at work in the world. And their interpretation might not share the vision of worship study and shared possessions and expanding the kingdom that we believe God has in store for us. And so there's one story being told out in the world, and then we get upset when people have a bad impression of Christianity and of faith in Jesus Christ because we're not taking the time to say, look, that is not the only story that Jesus has to offer you. And so I think that's an important place where we get stuck. You know, Paul's travels and Paul's journeys is not a plan that I think God has for my life. I don't think that Paul or that God wants me to travel from city to city, planting churches and then moving on to the next place. Those are not the skills or the gifts or the talents that I think that God has given me. But that does not let me off the hook for sharing the vision of what God's love has done in my life and what it can do for other people's lives. With those who come into my place or into my life. And that's where I think we struggle, where we meet that challenge. I don't know that I can say it enough, right? When we let one story take hold and that's all anybody's going to hear and they're not going to have time to listen to our story.
Exactly.
And the only way to fight that is to get out and tell our own story and to say, I know a different vision of Jesus. I know a God who loves you with a radical love. I know a God who wants a relationship with you in a way that you can never imagine. I know a God who has been setting people free from slavery since the beginning of time and wants to free you from your own slavery to your sin. Like, you know, we've got to tell a different story than the one that's out there. And we struggle with that sometimes, but we're working on it. So you mentioned earlier persecutions. And I think that this is probably the biggest thing that separates our modern American church from the early church. You know, I'm just going to throw out a couple of things here. In Acts chapter 5, the apostles are all thrown in prison. In Acts chapter 7, Stephen is the first martyr to be killed. In Acts chapter 12, James is killed and Peter is arrested. In Acts chapter 16, Paul and Silas are thrown in prison. And then from Acts chapter 21 all the way through the end of the story, Paul has been arrested. He actually goes to Jerusalem knowing he's going to be arrested. We see this in some of his letters that he writes. He says, I'm going to Jerusalem. I don't know what's going to happen there. he's saying, I don't know what's going to happen there because in all likelihood he's going to be arrested because he knows that the Jewish authorities are out to get him. Mm-hmm. Goes to Jerusalem knowing that's going to happen, gets arrested, and then the rest of the book of Acts, the last seven chapters, are Paul in prison moving from place to place. And every time he comes to a different ruler and he has to testify, he uses it as an opportunity to preach.
Right.
Right. So he's not just saying, oh, this is what right. I did. He's saying, let me tell you about Jesus, Mr. Governor of this area. Let me tell you about Jesus, Mr. Slightly Higher Governor of the slightly larger area.
Not only did you arrest me, but right. I'm going
to
tell you.
I'm going to go all the way to the top. Right. I'm going to appeal because, you know, this is a whole thing that gets into Roman citizenship that we don't have
right.
time to go into. But Paul was allowed to appeal his case all the way to the Roman emperor mm-hmm. Because he was a Roman citizen. And so he keeps going. He's like, whoever I'm going to tell, this is the story
yeah.
I'm going to keep telling.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think any of you have grounds to kill me. I think you all know that. So I'm going to keep appealing my case. And every
mm-hmm.
time I do, I'm going to talk about Jesus. I'm going to tell you how much God loves you. And I'm going to tell you the story that God has in store for all of us. And that persecution, I think, is not only what separates us, but I think it's a defining characteristic of the early church that makes it easier to be Christian in the United States today.
Mm-hmm.
Or I shouldn't say easier. Easier to do lip service to Christianity today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for someone to do lip service to Christianity in the early church could potentially cost them their life.
Yes. Yep.
And so if you were going to be in this, you had to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, it costs me nothing
mm-hmm.
to say that I'm a Christian or to say that I'm a member of such and such church.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to go every Sunday.
Right.
I don't have to give everything that I own. I don't have to live in fear of being arrested or being put in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the advantages, as you see it, what are the advantages and disadvantages of that? Do you think we should go back to the early church and go back to being persecuted?
No, I would prefer not to be killed or thrown in jail. But that is a sense of accountability.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a
yeah.
big sense of accountability.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're all in,
mm-hmm.
basically. And now, since we don't, I don't know where the accountability lies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so if now we have a personal relationship with Jesus, Jesus is our accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, coming to church, wanting to come to worship, wanting to participate in the Bible studies, wanting to do all that is a personal choice. And because I am loved by Jesus, and I know that I want to learn more, and I want to come to worship, and I want to teach children, and I want to do all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because someone's making me. It's because I want to do those things.
Yeah.
And my hope is that that's everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that because you are so moved, and you believe in Jesus, and know what he's done for you, and you have that personal relationship, that you want to be here,
yeah.
that you want to participate in things, that you want to bring your children up in this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's my hope.
Yeah, I think that maybe this is a really good conversation for another episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that maybe we get into this idea of where's our accountability now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're not having to put our literal life on the line,
right.
how do we put our spiritual life on the line,
right.
and how do we hold that above
mm-hmm.
it? I think that might be a valuable thing for us to come back to.
I like
so
that. Yep.
We've written that down. Listen for that episode in
yeah.
the weeks to come. But yeah, I think that we've kind of got this
mm-hmm.
picture of a church that once was, and I don't know that it'd be great to go back there, but
right.
I think that there are things that the early church knew because of their direct relationship to Jesus, right? These were when people who were coming to Jesus or coming to faith in Jesus because they were hearing from people who had walked with
mm-hmm.
Jesus about these stories. Some of these 3,000 may have been there when Jesus was crucified.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
it's
a decent chance that they were part
on
of that crowd too.
A mission.
Yeah.
Like they knew this
yeah.
is what we're doing. Get on board. We're going. Come with or
yep.
not.
Absolutely.
You know, but this is what we're doing. Come with us.
Yeah.
And they had a very clear direction on where they were going.
Yeah. Yep. They were not going to get sidetracked.
Nope.
They weren't worried about that. All right. I think that was good.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Take that, Patrick.
Aww.
Yeah.
He'll be back for the next one though.
Probably.
Whoop, whoop.
We'll see. Maybe we'll kick him off.
No.
Maybe we'll just be Katie and David from now on. Yeah, we won't kick him off. Well, we like Patrick.
And now it's recommendation time.
All right, so my recommendation, I've got that for us today, and I'm going to recommend you check out thebibleproject.com. We might have talked about the Bible Project podcast on here before. It's one that I listen to. Patrick checks it out periodically. But on the Bibleproject.com, they've got all sorts of videos that kind of give some background to books of the Bible, how to read different parts of the Bible, how to think about the early church through Jewish thought, things like that. Mm-hmm. We're going to link to a couple of videos in our show notes that particularly talk about the book of Acts and some of the early church things, the life of Paul. There's some great opportunities that are coming out there, so check it out as kind of a little primer for what we're doing. All right.
Yeah, and how can people get in touch with us?
Yeah, hey, if you want to get in touch with us, we would love to hear from you, especially if you liked the Katie and David version of this episode. We'd love to hear that, too. But hey, we're going to welcome Patrick back with open arms when he's back in the office next week. He'll probably still be exhausted because he will still have a four-week old at home, but we'll welcome him back anyway and invite him in. So if you like what you hear, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever it is that you use to listen to our podcast. Share it out to other people. Let them know that you enjoy what we're doing. You can find us on our website, beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, you can check us out on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast, where we put all of our latest episodes and links to funny stuff that we find and things of that nature. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a story about how you think the church is or is not being persecuted, or if you've ever been thrown off an airplane for not reading your seat card. Yeah, if you don't read the seat exit rule thing,
right?
We want to hear about it.
Absolutely.
If you've ever been thrown off an airplane against your will, we want to hear about that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That'd be
if you've
fun.
You've willingly jumped out of airplanes, why not? We want to hear about all of it. All right. We hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.